Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, and Boxer Lager, Boxer Light, or Boxer Ice, 36-pack cans, just $14.95 now through Tuesday at Brewers Outlet. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks, they roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call the day, Carl Anthony Towns gets it done for the T-Wolves.
Here's Towns, left of the lane against McGee. Tries the rip through move, and nearly lost the ball. He gets it back, starts to pound the dribble, spins on McGee, up strong and jams it! Carl Anthony Towns rocks the rim and puts the Wolves up by 8, 102-94. 20 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists for Carl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, I had a chance actually to go see the T-Wolves and Carl Anthony Towns on the Spurs last Friday night. I said, nah, it's okay. I've seen the T-Wolves play in person before. I'll be honest with you. You've seen them once. That's all you need. All right. Time to bring in the king. I think next week we should have some fun. And we should go through the prop bets for the Super Bowl.
Actually, during my lunch break this afternoon, I went on William Hill Superbook. And there's like 13 pages of prop bets. And I printed them all out, so I'll highlight some of the fun ones, and Suit's going to join us next Friday, too.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we were talking
today. Yeah, exactly.
Today.
That's the reaction of the audience, too.
Cool. we were talking today, and never even thought about it, but you know how pot's being legalized everywhere, every state? Eventually it'll be national, you know? What would the Super Bowl commercials be like then? Think about it, Doritos. You got the
snack
guys sitting there eating the Budweiser horses.
I wouldn't be surprised, though. Who knows how many years down the road that the cigarette companies are just going to stop making cigarettes and they're going to go into a new business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They start making pot. Well, isn't Budweiser one of them want to infuse marijuana into their beer?
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That.
I mean, the big thing is now is they're eating it, you know, gummy worms and stuff like that. So, but think about it. It's going to be big business. What if they want to advertise on the Super Bowl? You know, if you got the Budweiser horse, Keith Richards is riding it. You know, you're like, hey, this is cool, man. They could team it up with Doritos, and the hippies got the munchies, you know. It was just a thought. We got nothing to talk about here, so that's what we do.
So no football this weekend.
We got some good ones that you can't put on the air, but that's pretty good. So,
right.
So, boy, you had a tough day in State College, huh?
Yeah, the fourth person now has died from it. It happened just down the street from where I am.
Yeah, where your kids got married.
Yeah, yeah, we had the reception there.
Yep.
So it's it sounded like the guy and his ex-girlfriend, who knows how heated, how loud, whatever, and the 62-year-old man from Millersburg, Ohio, came over either to break it up or to calm it down or whatever. And he got shot, died at the scene.
Oh.
His 19-year-old son was with him. He was shot and wounded, and then he died this late this morning.
Oh, how awful.
He shot the girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend. She's in a hospital in Pittsburgh right now. And he then took off in his car and crashed the car on Wap Laney Drive, the street. When I first came here, we were in apartments a couple times before we bought a house.
Yeah,
Wap Laney Drive is where we lived down in that area.
Oh, I remember that.
And he crashed the car into a fence, I think. And he got out of the car and he got into a house randomly. And he killed the man in the house, an 83-year-old man. The wife of the 83-year-old man hid and locked herself in a bathroom. So she was unscathed, and then he evidently turned the weapon on himself and killed himself last night. So it was just absolutely, absolutely awful. Absolutely awful.
Goodness. Well, prayers are with him.
I believe when she was in the bathroom, she had the wherewithal. She had her phone with her and was able to get a hold of 911.
Right.
I can't even imagine stuff like that. It's just.
I was just telling Sean about Billy Ackerman.
Yeah.
He died in the big Budweiser shooting here in South Windsor.
Right, I remember that.
Yep, disgruntled employee came in. That was national news, which I think this will be national news tonight. But it was national news. The guy came in with a handgun and just started shooting people. He shot and killed 9 people in the factory, and Billy was one of them. So,
yeah.
Another guy we played football with.
Yeah, he was our center.
Yeah, and defensive end.
Yeah.
Good defensive end.
Good player.
Yeah, good athlete. Sad. Everything's sad. We got to talk about good things. So what did you guys think of the Patriots last week?
I thought they, for the most part, I thought they played great. I thought their plan was smart. Brady
is the only way they could win.
Let's start with this. I think what Andy Reid did to start the game was akin to what Lincoln Riley did for Oklahoma. You have to sit back and really know who you are. And I think a misjudgment like that is bothersome. Let's take special teams out of it. In the college football playoff, there were going to be 8 units on the field between Notre Dame, Clemson, Alabama, and Oklahoma. Which of those 8 was the single worst going into that weekend? The Oklahoma defense. In fact, it wasn't even close as to who the worst unit was going into the weekend. And he elected to defer. And Alabama said, we'll take the ball, we'll go against that unit. And suddenly you're playing from behind at 7-0. Andy Reid just did the same thing in the pro level last week. You can talk about bad calls, roughing the passer call that was absurd.
That was a bad call.
Well, it was a bad call because he guessed. You only call what you see. You do not guess. That is my biggest bone to pick with officials. You cannot miss the easy calls.
I think he just saw the hand go across the helmet, and that was it.
Why? Brady's helmet doesn't move.
Well, I realize that. I'm just saying that's what the referee saw. Now,
and he's wrong.
Contrast, look at the other game. I mean, my God, that guy got targeted. There were 3 different penalties on the play. Targeting. He never looked back for the ball. And he hit the guy long before the ball came to him, and there was no call. You know?
I can't miss that. Now, back to my point about Andy Reid. There were 8 units on the field last weekend. Which was the worst unit of the 8? Kansas City defense. Yeah, 31st. There are 32 teams in the NFL. Kansas City's defense was 31st in the NFL.
Well, Andy Reid...
He elected. It was his choice. He elected that Patrick Mahomes watch the beginning of the game.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think he felt that... I think what won the game for the Patriots was the time of possession, 40-20. I mean, that it was just so lopsided that, like Sean said, the Kansas City's defense was exhausted. They were on the field too long. So you're right. He should have given the ball to Mahomes to start the game, but they ended up just playing poop it out. You know,
well, guess
and
what?
Whoever had the ball, the biggest play in the game was Slater calling heads, you know, and the Patriots getting the ball in overtime.
But let's go further than that. The last 49 minutes of the game happened to be 29 Patriots, 20 Kansas City. 11 minutes were on that opening drive.
No, I know, you're right.
Where he deferred.
Had a lot of drives like that. Mahomes was never on the field. When he scored. And I think Andy Reid felt he could score at will, but he never dreamed that its defense could not get a three and out. You know?
You do not give away possessions in big games. You don't give away. If you've got an offense that can play, you do not give away possessions. Now, look, Kansas City may have gone three and out to start the game. And the Patriots get the ball at the 40-yard line. They go in and score. That's a distinct possibility. But if I've got that guy at quarterback, and I'm looking over the other side of the field, I see that quarterback, and I walk past my defensive meeting room and I see that group of individuals, I do not defer if I win the toss. I take the ball.
Yeah. Well, you're right. But maybe he was playing a Belichick head game, you know, because Belichick likes to defer, even though the week before he didn't, he took the ball. So it was a chess match. Andy Reid, God bless him, always had great teams, but I think you nailed it. I mean, he made a huge mistake there. He makes big games for whatever reason. I don't know. And some of it, I mean, that offsides call.
Oh, that was, you won the game.
Offsides. It was a no play, you know, and Kansas City fans were going nuts saying, oh, it was a, you know, they're giving the Patriots. Well, the guy was lined up a foot offsides.
Yeah,
you know?
Why didn't somebody
from the bench yell, your call timeout or, you know, you're offside,
But he also lined up where he was lined up was actually on the opposite hash in front of the Patriots bench and not Kansas City's bench.
Yeah, but you can look down the line and see that he's over.
Oh,
I mean, he wasn't,
believe me.
It wasn't like his helmet was over. His arm was, he was lined up a foot offsides.
And believe me, you know such things. Okay, in the Rose Bowl against USC in 2009 when I did that game, Penn State recovered a fumble. Game was scoreless. Penn State recovered a fumble. Huge momentum moment. Flag was down. All right. And I looked over at Jack and I said, I think, and we were, the Rose Bowl I did 2 years ago, we were at the 45-yard line. It was awesome. The Rose Bowl I did in 2009, we're at the goal line. And I looked over, I said, I fear that Aaron Maben lined up offside. And they announced that 59 was offside. And Jack in the commercial break said to me, how did you know it was Maben? I said, because he did it three times in practice yesterday.
Wow. I mean, you're trying to get every jump you can, but, man, in a big game, you just got to... To me, that wasn't even close. The worst call I've ever seen was in the New Orleans game. I just...
That's as bad as it gets.
No business being a referee in the NFL. That was just an awful call, and I'm one who doesn't believe one play makes a game. You know, I mean, there's a lot of plays in the game, but that one was just that their strategy was to get down and kill the clock, and you took their strategy away, and that.
Well, they, of course, you know, remember, New Orleans threw the ball in first down, too. They handed the Rams a timeout.
Yeah.
But the call, it's not a call by a guy. It's two guys. Remember, there are two people looking at that play. Because, obviously, every time you see a catch on the sideline that's close, you always see one official confer with the other official at the sideline. Feed in, juggling the ball, whatever. You had two people miss it on that play.
Did the referees ever make a comment? I know the NFL said they blew the call, but did the referees say what they thought they saw?
Nope.
We did learn this afternoon that Roby Coleman has been fined $26,739 by the NFL because of that helmet-to-helmet hit on Tommy Lee Lewis.
I've never seen something so blatant in my life. And no call. I mean, you've seen pass interferences where the guy pulled his shirt.
That's why I don't want them to review pass interference. I know that in the emotion after something like that happens, people are throwing out ideas, and I think it's perfectly fine to throw out ideas. It also is perfectly fine for me to suggest on the air that I reject it, because I don't want pass interference being looked at, because every play you look at, there's clutch and grab, clutch and grab, clutch and grab, clutch by both guys. I mean, come on.
Well, you're 100% right. That call should have been made. You didn't need replay to see it, you know.
No.
And you don't want them replaying every freaking call and saying, overturn it. Yeah, he touched his shoulder. It's pass interference.
So this could be a new prop bet. the amount of time it'll take Roger Goodell to bring this topic up next week in his State of the League announcement at the Super Bowl.
Well, he'll be asked about it.
Yeah.
He'll be asked about
sure,
it. He should be asked about it. And, of course, he'll do something like that for something for the competition committee to bring up.
Unless Tom Brady's involved, and then he'll hire $20 million worth of attorneys to take care of it. So, and it's very, very strange league. I mean, nobody likes the Patriots, and I'm a Giant fan, but I just, if you don't like them, then beat them. You know? You don't want them in the Super Bowl, beat them. They're right there for the taking. And you didn't get it done. Like you said, Andy Reid's decisions and you name it.
And Sean Payton's decisions, too. Sean Payton, you know, they get down by the goal line. They ended up settling for a field goal. They may have had a field goal on an incomplete Drew Brees pass anyway, but he decided to run a wildcat play with Taysom Hill. I'm thinking, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Okay,
why would you take the ball out of Drew Brees' hands? You know,
especially when Brees was off to a hot start. Brees looked really good at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And now they don't even care
if he's cold. If the game's on the line, my best player has the ball. I can sleep at night knowing that I lost the game and Drew had the ball in his hands. I can't sleep at night if Drew wasn't involved. And the Giants did that with Barkley this year.
I think the last series was against Dallas. It's the Cowboys.
All the Giants needed was 15 yards, and they kick a field goal and win the game. Barkley's having a career game. They get the Cowboys get a 15-yard penalty after, on the kickoff, so the Giants get the ball on the 45, right? Barkley never touches the ball. Four plays, Barkley never. I lose the game with the ball in Barkley's hands and say, hey, my best guy just couldn't get the play. But not Eli throwing the ball into the stands four times, you know.
I swear these guys, I know this is what they do for a living, but sometimes I swear they outthink themselves sometimes.
Yeah.
Don't be clever.
No.
Don't be clever. Okay? You know, you get the ball to Barkley once or twice. You want to trick him on one play, go ahead. Okay? Now the next part. You don't have to fake him out here. I'll take the ball. I've got Patrick Mahomes. Stop him.
Yeah. Yep. No, you're right. They shot themselves in the foot. They started the game. They lost momentum. And I put my kid out there and let him go. That kid's good. He's really good.
I mean,
he reminds me of Joe Montana.
Well, here's my point about putting him out there, too. The second part of it is you've worked on your 12-play script for a week.
Yeah.
In other words, those are the 12 plays.
You're an offensive-minded coach.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, you're not doing You're not doing adjustments here. You're doing your 12-play script.
Yeah. Still, the bottom line is their defense, no matter what, could not get the Patriots off the field. And when you have a time of possession difference of 2-1, you're not going to win that game. Or if you do, it's because you're throwing home runs. You know, they just didn't have the ball enough because the Patriots really couldn't stop Mahomes, you know. But he didn't have the ball enough. So.
No, he did not. He did not. And I give Mahomes and those guys credit because they're the ones that tied the game up by getting downfield in 32 seconds to get a field goal.
Exactly, yeah. No, the Patriots were wasted, too. That coin flip was huge.
Oh, no doubt.
And Julian Edelman, I mean, I don't know if he's going to have a brain left when he's done playing football, but that's one tough dude, man. He's the smallest guy in the field, and he is going across the middle and is fearless. And Brady was throwing ropes to him. I mean, they were right on the money, but I don't know. Brady, I mean, he controlled that game. I'm starting to like Tony Romo. I like what Romo said.
The difference
in this game is the Patriots quarterback has the ability to go to the line and audible out of any play, anytime he wants to. And he said, Mahomes is too young. He hasn't been around long enough to read defenses that well that he's going to change the play that the coach sent in. And he said there were opportunities for him to change it, but he wasn't, you know, he's young. He hasn't been around long enough to make that call. And he felt that was the difference in the game because Brady checked out of how many plays. And even if it was just a 3 or 4 yard gain, it kept Kansas City off the field. And but the guy controlled that game with his head.
He hit the big three third downs. He hit the big third downs in overtime because on that last drive, Brady was 4 of 9. But three of those four were the third down plays.
Yeah,
and not only that, but look, he's 41. He's 41. He gets what's going on around him. Almost all these passes are 7-8 yard shots. 7-8 yard shots.
Yeah, but he knows what the defense gives him. But he doesn't have anyone to stretch the field either. He doesn't have Antonio Brown.
That's why they signed Josh Gordon, and then they had to let him go.
Yeah, and that didn't. But it didn't matter to him. He said, "Okay, I go with what I got." Everyone criticizes the dink and dunking. Well, where do you want him to throw the ball? You know,
It's not a question of that. But I'll say the Patriots' offensive line has not given up a sack in the playoffs. Not part of that.
That's a huge key. And Gronkowski's blocking is incredible.
He's been great. Now, the question is, what's hurt the Patriots in the past has been pressure up the middle. This is where Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh come in.
The Rams. Yeah, I take back everything I said about Donald. The guy is great.
Well, Sue's been better in the playoffs, but Donald gets more attention. So.
Yeah.
All right. Prop bets next week. King will be here. Sean will be here. I'll be here. And we'll bring in a guest from the sales staff. What?
And we owe Sean some pickles.
Nah, we're good.
No. You won fair and square, dude. Unbelievable season.
Steve Blass, next half hour. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Michael Schuster is the fourth quarterback, at least was last season, for Penn State. His grandfather is Dick Hoke. Dick Hoke played at Penn State. Dick Hoke then played for the Steelers and was the running back coach for the Steelers for years. He drew one check from one organization from the time he got into pro football to the end, and that was with the Pittsburgh Steelers. This will mark the 60th season from the time that Steve Blass went to an organization called the Pittsburgh Pirates, and we welcome him to the show. Steve, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Well, Steve, it's great to join you again. Well, you bring up a great name, Dick Hoke. I got to know Dick, of course, watching him play for the Steelers, and then he and I shared the Dapper Dan Award in 1969. And it was great being around. He's one of the most down-to-earth guys I've ever been around when you consider what he's gone through and what he's accomplished. He has been a really good person, an ambassador of what all our professional sports should be with his accomplishments and the way he's handled himself. Great to hear his name brought up.
Yeah, no, I get a chance to talk to him once in a while at a Penn State football practice because his grandson's here now, so... And he is first class all the way. Out of Canaan, Connecticut, Housatonic High School. Yes, I might be one of the few people that can pronounce it correctly.
Right, you're right.
And you get to the Pirates organization. You started out on this journey. Now, this is the 60th season since that happened. When you hear that, what do you think?
Pride. It doesn't happen very much anymore to stay involved with one organization for that many years. And what I think about, too, when I hear 60 years, it brings back to Housatonic High School, because when I graduated in 1960, my dream, and I was close to realizing it, and I knew I would be, of playing professional baseball. When I was graduating in early June of that year, the Pittsburgh Pirates gave me an opportunity to live that dream, Steve. And, you know, my buddies say, well, you know, could have been the Dodgers, the Cardinals, you know, anybody, the Red Sox, but it wasn't. It was the Pittsburgh Pirates. And when somebody gives you a chance to live your dream, you don't forget that. So all that being said, they have my loyalty forever. Loyalty is a big deal for me. And, you know, we all have dreams. And when we're lucky enough to get to live our dream, you don't forget who gave you the chance to walk, kind of walk through that door.
And I can relate to that because of the almost 40 years I've been here at Penn State broadcasting their games. You go through your career. When the door opened to the broadcasting part, you've always been a great interviewer. You've always handled yourself well. What did you think about, okay, I'll give the broadcasting part a shot?
Well, you know, it's interesting because as a starting pitcher, you've got the other 6 days of the week to let your mind wander. I'm a big reader, Steve, and I think that vocabulary and is very important in broadcasting, especially for a color guy, because you want to get in, make your point very quickly, and get out, not intrude on the game. And if your vocabulary is good, you can choose the right words to convey what you're trying to say very quickly, and then make your point and get out of the way. And as I sat there between starts, and it's very honest, I thought, you know, I would love to give broadcasting a shot toward the end of my career. I was thinking that way. So I would practice sitting there doing play-by-play, and then I realized I can't do that. I really didn't think, you know, just mind playing. I can't do this. But I thought I could make a point, a legitimate point, being a color guy. To be quite honest, play-by-play is too tough for me. Keeping track of the traffic and the promos and the scorecard, what has to be done, and then being emphatically good. That is a gift that the play-by-play guys have. I don't, and I knew that pretty much right away. But I always thought I have the stories, I get the points to make very quickly. I'm a minimalist. That is a good thing, I think, for a color guy, not to ramble on too much because you don't have time. So I thought I could do that. Nellie King and I thought toward the end of his career, hey, maybe we could get a chance to work someday. And Nellie was so good to me, and it never happened. But I realized how hard it is to be play-by-play. I really did. I knew that right off. And so I'm quite happy to have carved this niche out as a color guy, having had all the help that I got from all the best guys I could ever possibly work with, Bob Prince, Lanny Fritteri, Mike Lang, John Sanders. It goes on and on, and the current group that we work with are terrific.
You bring up great memories for me as well, Steve, because, I mean, Nellie King and I, he was doing Duquesne.
Yeah.
What an awesome guy Nellie King was.
One of the best. You're going to run to, yeah. No matter what profession he was in, you're not going to find too many people that were as good a person overall than Nellie King. You're right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, now here's a tough one over a period of decades. What have you seen in the game that you think is better now than at any point you've seen in your lifetime? What part of the game do you look at and say, I don't know, I don't think they quite have that part right?
Well, I'm an old dinosaur. I don't know that I saw much that was better in my era. You know, there was only 8 teams in each league. There was a World Series. There wasn't as much technology. There wasn't as much analytics. There wasn't as much statistics. And baseball, I'll give you this. It is a game of numbers to a degree. But I think the clutter that we have introduced with all the technology, analytics, and statistics doesn't help the game all that much. I know there's room for some of that because that's the world we live in now, and that's okay. I understand that. But I think some of the charm of baseball is the stories, and you know they're almost to the point where they're trying to predict what's going to happen next. And one of the great things about baseball is that you don't know, and you're looking at, okay, what's next without knowing it. I mean, when they get down to the point where they give me a statistical number for their sacrifice fly probability percentage, come on, give me a break. I think we flooded it to a degree because I think I honestly think the higher percentage of people want to be entertained by the game, and there is a segment that people want to be informed too, and I think we can do that without quite as much analysis. And I can go on and on, Steve. The review going back to New York, I worked fast. I couldn't have imagined myself standing around for even 3 or 4 minutes when I'm really cooking, when I'm pitching well,
right,
for them to go to New York. So, I mean, I have a list of 20 things I'm not crazy about right now, and I don't want to go on chapter verse because that'll sound right. Too negative. But, right. You know, the game is good enough. The game is good enough to withstand all this. You know, the economics around it, the steroids, the this, the that. But the game has had a lot thrown at it, and it still survives.
Yeah, I know. In doing Penn State football, Penn State basketball, and also I also do the minor league state college spikes games in the summertime, we get inundated with stats. as long as you're smart about how you use it to fit a
Correct.
Situation, that's perfectly fine. All the other stuff is just noise. And I think you came down to me what I think is the perfect way to phrase it. People have to remember, this is, as much of it as a game, it's entertainment.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's, yeah, if I can project some fun and some entertainment and some comfort, I'm doing my job. I can't help but compare it with pitching. I thought the less clutter was the better. You know, I think these kids get so much information thrown at them also that I wonder if it sometimes intrudes on your gut instinct and feel of how you play and what you do and what you want to do next. But I couldn't agree with him more. It's entertainment. You know, we watch and listen to sports to get away from some of the other stuff in our life.
Yes.
We don't need to overload, I don't think. And you want to have time to catch your breath. If you don't give it a chance to breathe, you know, you're talking all the time. People, you want them to be able to sit back and put their feet and catch their breath a little bit every once in a while.
You are so right. All right. Now, on the realm of entertainment, I will ask you about 1969 and your one professional major league home run.
It's so long ago, Steve, I don't remember much about it, except it was September 5th, 1969, at Wrigley Field. The temperature was 74 degrees, 35% humidity, 26,412 people in the stands, wind blowing out at 4 miles an hour. Ken Holtzman was a pitcher. Other than that, it's so vague. I can't remember, but I do remember this, Steve. I went to first base, and the coach said, take a left, because I had usually veered off to the right and go back into the dugout. So it was a great day. It was a great day.
I had to ask that.
Thank you.
Next time I do ask it, if you could research a little bit more, come up with more detail, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I'll delve into that. But, you know, there was other aspects of the game that are kind of interesting. First of all, Bill Mazeroski and I were roommates, and it was his birthday, September 5th, 1969. I went 4-for-5, the best day I ever had at the bat, and I pitched a four-hitter, and Billy Williams got all four hits. He went 4-for-4, and if he'd been sick that day, I'd be in Cooperstown.
Oh, my goodness. Steve, it is an absolute pleasure. You are a joy on TV and a treasure on TV as well. You know, Pirate fans love you, and even if you're not a fan of the Pirates, they respect you. So thanks so much. Appreciate the time you gave us, and enjoy this 60th season coming up, because every platitude you receive, you will have earned.
Well, thanks, Steve. I enjoy the visit. I always look forward to talking to you, and it's a pleasure. And I'm sure we'll cross paths or cross airwaves down the road. I'll look forward to it.
Same here, Steve. Thanks so much, my friend.
Take care.
Steve Blass. Really, I mean, he is one of those guys who, on a broadcast, is a treasure to an organization. He is a treasure to that organization. He was a treasure on the mound. I mean, let's face it, how many people in this country can say that they threw a complete game in the seventh game of a World Series to win, which he did. He was also a 19-game winner, an all-star, a runner-up to the Cy Young. He did hit that home run. But right now, you know, to the current Pirate fan that may not have remembered his career or were born after his career, he is a treasure. I'll tell you a quick Ken Holtzman story. Want to hear a Ken Holtzman story?
Yeah.
Okay. This is ABC as Monday Night Football. And in 1976, ABC acquires the rights for Major League Baseball to do Monday Night Baseball. Okay. And the first unit they put out there in 1976... for Monday Night Baseball, Bob Prince, Bob Uecker, Warner Wolf. Warner Wolf was to be in what they perceived as the Howard Cosell position. Okay. They get to midseason of 1976, June of 76, whatever, and the Yankees are going to play the Detroit Tigers. Well, in 1976, the Tigers have a pitcher by the name of Mark the Bird Fidrich. He had wild, curly hair sticking out of that Tiger's cap. He'd talk to the baseball. He'd pat the mound. He was one of the all-time characters in the game, and he was a rookie. Now, it turns out in that particular year, I believe Fidrich won 19 games. They were going to face the Yankees. Well, the producers and the entire production staff happen to be from New York, so they're sitting down to talk about this is what we're going to do in the pregame show. And the producer tells everybody, look, we're going to feature Ken Holtzman in the open. And the broadcasters, Wolf, Uecker, Bob Prince, step back and say, whoa, hold on a second here. Now, wait a minute. L.A. Fidrich, he talks to the ball. He pats the mound. He's pitching great. I mean, he might be the Cy Young Award. No. That's what the producer says. Ken Holtzman pitched for the Oakland A's. He won World Series games. He's the Yankee starting pitcher. That's who we're featuring in the open. Ken Holtzman. So they feature Ken Holtzman in the open. And then Fidrich goes out and pitches this absolute gem of a game where he's patting the mound, talking to the ball, striking Yankees out, right? And he was the story of the game. That, you know, baseball, I think, has evolved from it's Ken Holtzman, the World Series guy for the A's, who's now pitching for the Yankees, the New York Yankees, to now at least having a better understanding. And look, listen to the announcers. The announcers actually do have a feel for the people that are playing the game. All right, that was my Ken Holtzman story. Not a negative Ken Holtzman story, just they featured the wrong guy. We'll come back with more in a moment. Wrap it up on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. All right, so next week we're going to do, what, on Friday, prop bets, correct?
That's right. The top ones, 13 pages at last check, according to William Hill Superbook in Vegas.
Okay. It's amazing. Now, what's amazing about this, I'm going to be very interested to see the betting numbers across the country, because obviously the Super Bowl is the single heaviest bet in this country every year. With Sportsbook now open in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, Nevada, obviously, Mississippi, West Virginia, New Mexico, will we see, quote, more action than ever before? Well, I mean, it doesn't take anything from somebody from Maryland to drive over, or Virginia to drive over to Delaware or Pennsylvania to place a bet, or New York. Or Rhode Island, I think, has it too. I think Rhode Island has it now. And it's going to be interesting to see if there's more money wagered this year, because, you know, it's not the heavy wagerer. It's the person that's going to put $10, $25, $50, $100 on whatever, how long the national anthem is. So I'm interested to see, as an aside on the Super Bowl, if more money is wagered this year because there are more avenues in which to do it. We'll have the king of the prop bets on with us next week. You know who that is. The guy who actually times out the national anthem.
Oh, yes, right. Figuring that out as we speak. 155
Last year, after the national anthem was over with, he texted you.
Yes.
you were momentarily stunned. What does this mean?
Yeah, I think
you weren't thinking about it.
Yeah,
I was, Americans.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting another meatball sandwich and making sure I had a brewski ready to go for the game.
And of course, you know what bothers him? Is I don't tune in until after the national anthem. I'm like, okay, so not now? I mean, I was watching the Waste Management Open last year. Oh, good, the game's about to start. Sorry, I don't go in for all that pregame mumbo jumbo. I just don't.
Yeah, I think just CBS coverage like 11:30. next Sunday morning, something like that.
And just as a side note to CBS, Bill Cowher doesn't coach anymore. All right, so, and hasn't for a long time. Okay, just as a side note, don't forget Coach Cowher coming up at halftime. Like, he's not, who's he coaching?
Or maybe he'll introduce Maroon 5.
Oh, take halftime back to 12 minutes.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.